Welcome back, friends. So glad to have you here. We are continuing on our journey of the Gita. We are at chapter 6. Last episode, we did chapter 6. We did from verse 1 through verse 5, and we are through verse 4. And today we're going to start at verse 5 and hopefully get up to verse 9. So verse 5 says, lift yourself from this bondage. Bondage to the world, bondage to your desires, your possessiveness. Lift yourself from this bondage, from this low state. Lift yourself by yourself. Don't lower yourself. His self is his friend. His self is his enemy. He's talking about a self-realized person or somebody on the journey to self-realization, saying, his self is his friend. His Atman is his friend. His Atman is his enemy. Lift yourself from this bondage by yourself. This is a very often quoted verse that you have to lift yourself by yourself. Like we say in English, you know, pull up yourself with your bootstraps.
Yeah.
And what that means is what he's saying, and Shankaracharya also commented on this in the Viveka Chudamani. He says, if you need something to be done for yourself, you need to do it yourself. You can't have somebody else do it. If you're hungry, I can't say to a servant, go and eat, come back, my stomach will be filled. You need to go to the bathroom. You can't send somebody else to do it. You want to lift and build up your body. You want to go to the gym. You can't send a trainer to do it for you and pay him. You have to do this yourself. Off the main things, this is extremely important. This is where you need to get to the mind and control it by yourself. Nobody can do it for you. A book that teaches you spiritual knowledge, a teacher, a guru, classes, lectures, videos are but signposts. They just direct you. They say, go this way. But you've got to do it yourself. Mm-hmm. Nobody else can do it for you. You have to do this journey. You have to get onto that train, or you have to walk yourself. You can't just sit on the guru or the book and say, okay, take me there. If you do, you get freedom from this bondage. But if you don't, you remain bound. Some people have said, and I promise you, people have said this to me, say, I'm very happy with the way I am right now. I drink my scotch every evening. These were his words. He said, I have 2 glasses of scotch in the evening. I have my meal. I'm satisfied. I work. I make a lot of money. And I'm perfectly happy in my life. Why do I need to change? And he doesn't. Hinduism, the Gita Upanishad say, until you're ready, just put your desires into action. You can't force somebody to do this.
Right.
If you're not ready, only when you become like Janaka, where you have all the wealth, you're a king, you're a Raja Rishi, you have reached to the top, you've got all the money, you've got all the power, you've got everything, and you say, what's in this? There's nothing in it for me. Only then. Until that time, you cannot do it. Otherwise, your own mind, your own Atman, your own intellect becomes your like your enemy. He doesn't say he is, because Atman cannot be your friend, Atman cannot be your enemy. He is like your friend, like your enemy. So how do you do this? You do it by station A on the train. You do karma yoga, selfless actions with sacrifice, giving to somebody else. And you make your mind and your intellect your partner in this. Remember, you got to do it yourself. So your mind and your intellect has to be your partner in this. Don't work at cross purposes with your mind or intellect. It should work hand in hand by doing this, getting single-pointed mind to gaining this knowledge. How do we know when we are qualified to start meditation? When we are no longer drawn by these sense objects. The example I gave last time was that when you go into a toy store with a child, the child is jumping up and down, say, I want this toy, I want that toy. When you go into the toy store, you are not affected by it. Why? Because you've grown past that desire for those toys. When you were a child, you were interested. Now, you don't have those. Similarly, you are only qualified to start meditating when you're not jumping up and down with desires for the worldly things, when you're no longer drawn by the sense objects, and your actions are not driven by desires. Renounce our desires, and only then are you ready for meditation. Chapter 6, verse 6. for the person who has conquered his senses and his body, his mind, and his intellect, the Atman is his friend. But for the person who has not conquered these senses or the mind or the Atman verily becomes hostile like an enemy, is what verse 6 says. So it is necessary to integrate your senses, your sense organs, your mind, your intellect, as if you are a surgeon with a sharp scalpel. That sharp scalpel has to be almost like a part of your body in order to work it. You can't say, well, I don't know how to use this, and you're going to mess up the surgery. Your mind, your intellect, your senses have to be completely under your control, using it as expertly as a surgeon would use a scalpel. Specifically, the mind. Now, the mind, again, is filled with a hard drive, a prakriti that is centuries old from thousands of lives, and it has given you a lot of stuff that is inside you. Believe it or not, you are born, and from an early age, you have likes and dislikes. You could be an identical twin, and your likes and dislikes would be different from your twin's likes and dislikes. Why? Yeah. Because your hard drive is different because of your previous likes and dislikes from previous life. Your mind feels, it has emotions, love, hatred, jealousy, anger. It thinks, should I do this? Should I do that? It has its own fears. It has its own jealousy. It has sadness. It has guilt. It has love. It has positive feelings, love, friendliness, pity. It has been filled with all of this from your previous lives. You must train that mind to be working with you hand in hand when you want to do meditation. You can't force it to do anything. You know this. I mean, give you an example. The child who's in the toy store, who's saying, I want this, I want this, I want this, right? Yep. Imagine that's your mind. And you grab the child by the collar and say, come on, we're late. You got to go. Let's go. You pull him out of the toy store. Sorry about the train.
It's time for
you
the train.
Pull him. You pull him out of the toy store. He is going to have a fit.
Yes.
He's going to cry. He's going to have a tantrum. He's red in the face. He's crying. He's not happy. So that's what happens with you when your mind is fixated on something and you say, nah, 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 it's time to meditate now. Can't work. Your mind is
right.
Many, many thousand times more powerful than your current state of affairs. Your mind is so powerful from having, it's an old, old, very powerful tree that is so wide. There's little axe, doesn't do anything to it. So you must train it. For example, your mind, forget the toy store, your mind is thinking about the boss that yelled at you at work. Mm-hmm. He embarrassed you. You're mad at the boss. You're embarrassed because how am I going to face these people tomorrow when I go back to work? And you say, okay, sit down, meditate. Put that out of your mind. Doesn't work. Your mind will say, uh-uh, you helped me resolve this. So what do you do with a child that says, I want to stay here and get some toys, and you want him to come out? You bargain with him, right? You bargain with him and you say, listen, why don't we do this? Let's go home. You know what you really like to do? You like to play marbles with me, or you like to play this with me? I'm going to do that as soon as we get home. Mm-hmm. Say, really? Okay, come on. Now the child is willing to go with you because you made a deal with him.
Right.
Similarly, you make a deal with your mind because your mind is much more powerful than you are. You make a deal and you say, okay, why don't you do this? Let's put that aside for now. You're right. The boss embarrassed you. You're mad at him, but tomorrow let's do XYZ. Let's go talk to him. Let's go this. Let's do this. Whatever plan you come up with for whatever your mind was insulted by, hurt by, felt bad about, make a deal with your mind. Only then can you meditate. So for the person who has conquered his senses and his body, his mind, his intellect, the Atman is his friend. But for the person who has not, the Atman verily becomes hostile like an enemy. So he's talking about the Atman. But it's not the Atman that is your friend or your enemy. Really, he means his mind and the mind and intellect, because the Atman is basically neutral. Remember right. that.
Yeah.
We always say, well, God is angry with us. God punished us. God doesn't like us. God likes me. Gave me a reward. It's not the Atman that does all that. Chapter 6, verse 7. The Supreme One, who is self-controlled and peaceful, who is balanced in cold and heat, in pleasure and pain, and also in honor and dishonor, is the one who is blessed. So when he says self-controlled in his self-subject, same as thing, sometimes it repeats it in different words, so it goes into our heads.
Right.
The Supreme One, the Self-Realized One, he is controlled, self-controlled, and he's peaceful. He's balanced in cold and heat, meaning that's the body. The body senses cold, the body senses heat. He's balanced in pleasure and pain, which is the mind that has the emotions of pleasure and pain. And he's balanced in honor and dishonor, that's the intellect.
Right.
So these are the raga and dvesha. I like to be honored. I don't like to be insulted or dishonored. I like warm temperature. I don't like cold temperature. I like pleasure. I don't like pain. So this raga and dvesha, a self-realized person says, I don't have any. Whether it's hot or cold, I don't care. Either way, I'm okay with it.
Right.
Whether I get pleasure or pain, I'm okay with it. I know this is just temporary, and my Atman doesn't feel it. It's my body that's feeling it. Honor, dishonor, I'm okay with that. So we need to get past this attachment to our mind and intellect and body, because we're controlled by it. You know, it's like leading a donkey. This is a good example, right? We talked in previous things about Mullah, who said he's sitting on a donkey and the donkey's running, and somebody says to him, hey, where are you going, Mullah? He says, don't ask me, ask the donkey. So the mind is running away, and he says, I don't know where it's going. It just keeps going from here to there. We have to control our mind in that respect. You may say, no, my mind is under my control, but the donkey who's tied to you, if you let the rope go and the donkey starts running, who runs after whom? Does the donkey run after you? No, you run after the donkey.
Right.
So who's attached to whom? You are attached to the donkey. You are attached, your intellect, yourself attached to your mind and its wishes, its desires, its fears. All of this is your attachment. In a healthy body, just like you have no symptoms. Right now, if you say, how's your liver? I say, my liver? Fine. I don't feel it. Do you feel it?
No.
How's your heart? My heart's fine. I don't feel it. How's your lungs? Fine. So what that means is when your heart is healthy, your lungs are healthy, your liver's healthy, you don't know it's there. Same with any part of your body. If you're healthy, you don't know that it's there. You don't, it functions well. That's how your mind should be. You should not know that your mind is there. But instead, each one of us, our mind is throwing out depressive symptoms, anxiety, fear, jealousy, anger, all those things that I mentioned in the previous verse. All of those things constantly let us know that the mind is there. Get rid of that. Get rid of that, and your mind should be absolutely still. And when you have such a stillness, that such a person who is at station C now, from the train station analogy that we gave, recognizing his Atman as Paramatma, not just his own Atma within himself, but Paramatma, meaning all-pervasive. That Atman is in everything. So I see the same Atman in me as in Lou. I see the same Atman as in me as in a terrorist or a saint or an animal or whatever. And I hate to hurt another animal because it has the same Atman in me. And I say, I can't hurt this. That's where ahimsa comes about, where you say an attitude of not wanting to cause undue injury. So this verse says, a person such as this recognizes that the Atman is the same everywhere as in him. So he remains the same in all situations, hot or cold, happiness, unhappiness, honor, dishonor, since he is well established in himself. The other thing to keep in mind is that even though he recognizes that my Atman and Lu's Atman is the same, my Atman and a terrorist's Atman is the same, and the saint is the same, I feel the same towards everybody. But don't for a minute think that I'm going to go near the terrorist and act towards him a certain way, nor, even though I know that the Atman is the same, the living energy within a tiger and a cow is the same, I'm not going to go near a tiger and put my hand out for him. I'm not a fool. Similarly, we have to recognize that that same Atman enlivens, just like a petrol, gas, enlivens a big, powerful race car versus a small, puny little car that is, saves on gas. It's the same gasoline,
yep.
Different engines. One is dangerous, one is mild and meek. A cow is mild and meek, a tiger is dangerous. Same Atman enlivens everything, just like a tree or a human being. But you have to use your intellect to judge which one is which and decide on how you're going to behave with that. So,
same Atman, different Prakritis, right?
Same Atman, different Prakritis, different gunas, mm-hmm. that this person has of attacking. The Atman is the same, but the wishes of that person are different. A terrorist wants to hurt for whatever his own reasons are. You say, I won't go near him. Chapter 6, verse 8. The yogi who is satisfied with knowledge and wisdom remains unshaken and has controlled his senses. To him, a lump of earth, a stone, and gold are the same. He has realized his self, the self. All of this, we get to be to the point of self-realization because of self-realized rishis from the past who have taught us this. Now, I had a discussion yesterday with somebody, one of the listeners, who asked me about whether Hinduism is a religion.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a long discussion. I won't go into that right now. But recognize that nowhere have I ever said to you, listeners, you must go to a temple or a church or a synagogue or a mosque. Nowhere does the Gita say that or say you must give money to a priest or you must do a prayer. All it says is go within yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Seek your own self. To me, that's not a religion.
Right.
It's helping you to help yourself without asking for you to do anything in return. We learned this from the self-realized rishis who taught this to us without even knowing their name. We don't know their name. Who wrote the Gita? I don't know. We can presume, but we don't know that. Who wrote the Upanishads? Upanishads have no name to it. So we learned this from the Gita, from the Upanishads, Tattva Bodha, self-realized rishis, all of them teach us that this I, the pure consciousness, is what we have to try to reach. Now, we talk about five, you know, this will be a good subject for us to talk about, Lou, sometime. The five sheets that make up a human being. Five sheets.
Five sheets.
Sheet.
Mm-hmm.
Like the sheet across, say, a sword or
oh, sheath.
Food.
Okay,
sheet.
Yes.
Annamaya kosha, which is the sheet made of food, which is your flesh and bones. The pranamaya kosha, which is the prana, which is energy, life force within you. The mano kosha, which is the mind. The vijnana man kosha, which is the intellect. And the anandamaya kosha, which is the happiness, which you experience in deep sleep state. So the Atman, the I, is different from the thought, body, mind, gross body, mind, and impressions of the past lives. But these five sheets, am I saying it right?
Sheaths, yeah. Oh, yeah, sheaths.
Sheaths,
yep.
Sheaths. They're all different in every person. The body is different. The annamaya kosha, what food you eat, produces a different body. Produce muscle or fat or whatever. The Atman is always the pure Sat Chit Anand. Tat Tvamasi, you are that. A realized master is not surprised by anything. He's calm throughout all experiences. He's quiet. He's very still. His eyes are focused, not running everywhere. We talked about this in detail last time. His body is absolutely still. His mind is absolutely still. A yogi becomes what's known as a Yuktaha. Yuktaha is a self-realized person. He is sama, he's same in all, whether it's be a terrorist, a saint, or a tiger or lion, is in all conditions. His environment, whether it's cold, hot, honor, dishonor, it's all the same. So people have said, well, how can you look at gold and say it's the same as earth or stone or water? And the way you can analogize that is to say in a dream that you have all this wealth, there's
right.
diamonds and gold, and you've got this all in your possession. Then you wake up and you say, what was that? It was just a figment of my imagination. It's worthless.
Right.
So, well, if you held on to that, if you could bring it back from your dream, But you say it has no value because in the dream, it had no value. You thought it had value, but it really doesn't. Similarly, this is a dream from reality, mm-hmm. right? What right. gold you see, what earth you see, what stone you see, what water you see, really, you may say, oh, it has a lot of value. But the real you, just like from the dream to the waking state, from the waking state to the fourth state, which is Turiya, this will have no value for you. So it's hard at this stage when we are at station A, not even at station A, we're running to the station to catch the train. We recognize that gold has value or something else has value. But in reality, once you start on that train and that journey, you'll start to see that the value becomes less and less for that. Right. So for a self-realized person, mud, stone, gold, they're all the same for a yuktaha. Nothing he sees is for him. It doesn't belong to him. We say this house is mine, this backyard is mine, this tree is mine, this grass is mine, this lawn is mine, these flowers are mine. Nothing is yours. Each one has its own sat, own chit, and own anand. What that means is I can see this as existing, just like I exist, but I'm not the existence. I'm conscious that it is existing, but I'm not. I'm consciousness. It has its own consciousness. This tree, this backyard is not mine. So last verse in this episode, verse 9. He who has equal regard for, 1, the good-hearted, 2, friends, 3, foes, enemies, 4, people who are indifferent to him, 5, people who are neutral to him, 6, people who are hateful to him, 7, relatives, 8, righteous people, 9, unrighteous people, such a person excels. So what he's saying here is that it doesn't matter how these people are, because a friend is somebody or a relative who cares for you. He's going to forgive any mistakes you make, any thing that you did that might have offended him. He'll say, oh, it's okay, you're still my brother, you're still my friend, right. And he forgives you. And you have therefore feelings for him, and you say, yeah, you know, he forgave me last time, I made a mistake, we all do. He forgave me, he's my friend, I'm okay with him. But that enemy, forget it. He insulted me last time. If he does anything, I will get back at him. He can do anything and my rage towards it, great. But a self-realized person has the same feelings towards all of this. It's like you or I looking at an ornament, a beautifully decorated gold bangle and a gold necklace and gold earrings. We look and we say, oh my God, those are beautiful. I love that earring. I love that necklace. I love that bangle. I wish I could have that. I have other bangles, other necklaces, other earrings, but not like that. Mm-hmm. To a self-realized person, he only sees it as, he sees it as an ornament, of course, but he sees the gold in it. He says, yeah, this is all gold. This ornament, this ornament, this ornament, it's all gold.
Yeah.
You and I look at a tsunami or a ripple or a wave, and we say, wow, look at how big that wave is. Look at how small that wave is. To him, he says it all as ocean water.
Right.
You and I look at a terrorist or a saint, and he sees it both as Atman. He sees the same, whether it is a foe, somebody who's indifferent to him, somebody hates him. He sees it, he's equal towards all of them. But although he feels the same towards all, he sees the Atman in all, and therefore his interaction with each is different. A person with steady wisdom relates the same towards each of these, but the difference only happens because of circumstances, objects, and people. These are the three areas that all of our feelings change about circumstances, what circumstance it is, what person it is, and what object it is. Mm-hmm. Those are the three complicating things because the event could be the same.
Right.
But if the person's different, or the object is different, or the circumstance is different, our feelings towards it change. And a self-realized person has the same for all of these, regardless of circumstances, objects, or people. So, friends, we've finished verse 9 in chapter 6, and I hope you join us next time for the further continuance. We are going to be talking the next episode about the Gita teaching us how to meditate, how to prepare the site of meditation. Now, the Gita and the Upanishads are the first textbook on meditation. Everything else that you have learned or we learned from TV or self-realized classes that people, how to do meditation comes, this is the master of all of them. So I hope you join us and I'll see you then. Lou, thank you so much for everything.